Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An Erio's original.
Hey listeners, it's the holidays, a time for love, family, giving, rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We're so grateful for all of the love that we've gotten. And if you like this show, please go online, go on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us keep the show going and it helps us spread the word. I'll read a recent review we got. It's from Bay920. And it says, a tiny bit of history with a lot of humor. Okay, listen, this podcast is great. I have a long commute and I love listening to this podcast on my way home after a long day. They aren't historians, they're comedians, and I appreciate their take on the historical tragedies they are discussing. I also appreciate their openness in discussing their own anxieties. Do I need to get dowel rods now for the windows now because they made me anxious about someone sliding my windows open? Yes. Do I care? No. Also, am I the only person who thinks her husband sounds like Paul Rudd? No, you don't have to feel bad about wanting to use dowel rods on your window. It's totally reasonable. And yeah, you're right. He does kind of sound like Paul Rudd. Thank you so much. Everyone have a happy holiday. Let's get started.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario. In my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we discuss history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're going to be doing Y2K, the most catastrophic non-disaster of all the disasters. Let's get started. The year 2000 problem, the Y2K problem, the millennium bug, or just Y2K. It went by a number of different names, and in 1999, it was one of the hottest topics of conversation. Some believed the modern world was on the verge of collapse, while others thought it was a hoax. Regardless of where you fell on the spectrum, the turn of the century was awaited with anxieties and fears that when the year turned from 1999 to 2000, computer programs would experience massive errors. Due to how they had been programmed earlier in the century, experts anticipated that they would mistake the year 2000 for the year 1900. At the time, many programmers used a two-digit code for the year, so just 88 instead of 1988, because computer storage was expensive and doing so saved a lot of room and therefore money. All in all, billions of dollars were spent globally and in the US in preparation for people to go nuts. But in the end, people around the world watched the countdown into the new year, not knowing what to expect. Anticlimactically, and some might say thankfully, the clock struck 12, the year changed over, and things stayed the same. It's the biggest non-disaster disaster since the turn of the century. Fun facts, aka death stats. The first recorded mention of the Y2K problem was on January 18, 1985. A guy named Spencer Bowles posted about this problem in a Usenet forum. He brought it up because a programmer friend of his was losing sleep over it. On October of 1998, U.S. President Bill Clinton signed the Year 2000 Information and Readiness Disclosure Act. The law was designed to encourage American companies to share Y2K data by offering them limited liability protection for sharing information about Y2K products, methods, and best practices. The list of potential catastrophes ranged from mistaken nuclear launches, to planes falling from the sky, to money being wiped away from bank accounts. The United States spent about $100 billion to prep for Y2K. $9 billion of that was spent by the federal government, and the rest by utility companies, banks, airlines, telecommunication firms, and just about every other corporate entity with more than a few computers. Globally, it's estimated that the spending was somewhere between $300 billion to $500 billion. Countries that barely prepared, like Italy, Russia, and South Korea, ended up having the same experience as countries that freaked out and threw tons of money at the problem, like the U.S. What a disaster. Today, we have a very special guest, someone who is going to help us really point the finger at this non-disaster disaster. Everyone, we have Molly Hockey here.
Hi.
Hi, Molly. Now, you are the perfect person to for this episode, because you guys probably know this, but she also has a podcast called Spermcast.
Everybody on the planet knows.
Everyone knows.
If you don't know, you're out of your mind.
But it's all about planning, sort of. Tell us, Molly.
Spermcast was originally my quest for a sperm donor, and then turned into my quest for pregnancy, and then turned into my quest for sanity. I mean, I got my sperm donor, then went through a whole lot of stuff, and I still don't have a baby yet, so we're working on it.
So what a journey, guys. I mean,
it's
what
a journey. And the struggle for me is that I do love planning. I make lists. I just imagine everything that's going to happen. I think of every possible scenario, but I never, ever, ever get it right. So good luck. I'm not going to do a good job today figuring out Y2K, but I'll do my best. I can't plan.
And it
gives me anxiety.
Not
knowing what's going to happen gives me a lot of anxiety.
Oh my God, join the club.
Yeah.
I mean, I am a list maker, an itinerary guru, a planner.
Are you a Virgo?
No, I'm Aquarius.
I don't know anything about Aquarius. Oh. I'm a Virgo.
Well, I'm Aquarius, but my, you know, moons and houses or whatever are in Capricorn and Gemini.
Also don't know about those.
Cool. Glad we're talking. Are you a Virgo?
I'm a Virgo.
I actually know nothing about Virgos.
All I know is that we're planners and organized and everything like that. But I think I would describe myself as a struggling Virgo, because I do all of the writing down and the lists and all of that. But I fail. I just cannot organize. I do not have a stable life at all.
Well, but the podcast is just so good, and it really like takes you along on this journey.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't sound like
it's so funny.
It's
and
so
absurd
funny.
And it's also very sad
it
at
is.
Times
and honest.
Yeah,
I highly recommend.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Wow.
And now let's get down to business, because
okay.
This is not going to be easy.
We're going
to
figure it out.
No.
No, we're not.
Definitely not. But we'll say we sure we are.
Okay.
So Y2K, like I remember mm-hmm. Y2K. I was a teenager and I was like, oh my God, like maybe I'll have a boyfriend in Y2K. And like, and then I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, just when I'll probably have a boyfriend, like the world's gonna end, like just my luck, which actually has been consistent throughout my life. You know, just when I think I'm gonna get something, you know, it all falls apart.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's life.
That's life. And that's why we are doing this podcast, to make sure nothing falls apart anymore.
That's right.
Where were you?
Oh,
do you remember your Y2K experience?
Yeah, I sure do. But, Yeah. I don't remember being super freaked out about it, just mildly prepared for whatever was, what was, for whatever was going to happen. Why does that not come out? For whatever was going to.
Yeah.
Anywho, I had graduated college. I was at my parents' house and I lived outside of New York City and definitely didn't want to go into the city.
Yeah.
My boyfriend was, he flew in from Alaska.
Oh, an Alaskan boyfriend.
Yeah, he was great. Oh, gosh.
That's love. That's a long flight.
He was the best. I really screwed up on that one.
We all have those.
Oh, my gosh. Anywho, he brought king crab legs and...
Wow.
Yes, he was a fisherman. He was a crab... I mean...
Wow. You met him online or...
In college.
Oh. Oh, well, why was he in Alaska?
Because he grew up in Alaska, and that's what he did. That's what he did.
But
he was a salmon fisherman in the summers, and then I was one time, too. This is another podcast.
Sure.
but in the winters, he would do crabbing.
So your boyfriend's here. Y2K is happening. Did you think it was going to be the end of the world?
No, we were at my parents' house. I grew up on a farm, so they have a generator. We thought everything was just going to be, you know, maybe there will be some computer glitches, but we'll be fine. But it'll be nice to have my boyfriend there with me just in case, and also to have my parents around. That'll be safe. And I remember it was snowing, and we boiled lobsters and the crab legs outside in a huge, whatever you boil them in. And one of those
pot?
Lobster pot?
Yeah.
There you go.
And that was that.
And that was that. It was wonderful. Probably my favorite, because I don't like New Year's Eve. And it was probably my favorite New Year's Eve ever.
It's interesting you say that because it was also one of my favorite New Year's Eves ever. My parents were also of the camp of like, nothing's going to happen. You know, don't believe the media. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as a result, of course, I was panicked. You know, they were not prepared. There was no generator in sight. So I was like, I'm on my own. And
how old were you?
I must have been like 15. Uh-huh, I want to say I was young enough that I didn't have control.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But old enough to understand that they were doing it wrong.
Yeah,
right. And what, you know, clock struck 12.
And you were in LA?
No, I was in Miami. This was in Miami.
Oh, so you were on the East Coast. Yeah, wait.
East Coast.
I guess where did Y2K, like, it starts
it was
in Australia? Globally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was like, Y2K was global.
Right, right, right.
One of those disasters we all shared.
But we might have, you know, had a heads up if it starts, you know, the time right. changes in Australia. Maybe we already were a calm by that hour. I don't
maybe.
Remember it.
I just remember the clock striking 12 and then nothing happened. And then my cousins and I, we were having a party at my parents' house and we stayed up all night and we ended up going to watch the sunset on South Beach.
Sunrise?
Sunrise, yeah. We watched the sunrise on South Beach.
Ooh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it was like one of those like, I didn't die. The world isn't over. It was like a rebirth.
Yeah, that's fun.
But that said, mm-hmm. we ended up having nice experiences, but the leading up to that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I think that what we need to do is kind of like understand how did we even get there?
Right.
So without getting too technical, I kind of did like a search on the history of computer programming because this was the big thing. There's the bug. There was a huge oversight on these computer programmers. And I found that, you know, computer programming started in the 40s. Mm. So this is way back. And there were, you know, they were storing data on machines. But it wasn't until 1949 that the concept of stored program computers was introduced, and both programs and data were stored and manipulated in the same way in a computer memory. So essentially like the memory of a computer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these programmers that started in 49 and then like kind of the 60s through the 80s, when computers were kind of like taking off, they were admittedly short-sighted when they developed this two-digit format to save money.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially it was like instead of saying 1988, they just put 88,
yeah.
Assuming that it would always be 19.
Right. Just to save space.
Let's save space. Apparently it must have been – this is my biggest question. And everyone, we also have a producer, Maria, here with us.
Hi, guys. Maria.
Hi, how's it going?
Great.
Yo, 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 Maria. So my biggest thing is, like, how much did they actually save by doing this two-digit system? Because if it was more than 500 billion, then they're excused. But if it was less than 500 billion, which is ultimately... Yeah, money-wise, then they're in big trouble, in my opinion. Big, big, big trouble. So short-sighted, right? So the bug at the center of this is according to Time magazine. Mm-hmm. The bug at the center of the year 2000 mess is fairly simple in what's providing to be a ludicrously short-sighted shortcut. Many system programmers set aside only two digits to denote the year and dates, as in 06/15/98 rather than 06/15/1998. Trouble is, when the computer clock strikes 12, the math can get screwy. Date-based equations like 98 - 97 = 1 become 00 - 97 = -97.
-3.
Oh, God.
No. This is why.
Oh, I can't.
There are some mathematicians out there who are going to be really angry at the rest of this podcast. But that can prompt some computers to do the wrong thing and stop others from doing anything at all. So apparently people were scared that because of this two-digit situation, that was going to throw everything off.
Yeah.
So let's start light. And just put any programmer that programmed a computer from 1949 to, let's say, I'm picking a random date, but like 98?
Sure.
I mean, by 98.
But they knew about it by then.
Yeah. So maybe through 1990.
Okay.
Yeah. That gives a buffer of 10 years for people to start freaking out.
Okay.
It just blows my mind that they didn't have that foresight.
I feel like I saw something in my vast research that I did.
I watched 2 YouTube videos.
But I thought one of them said that there was a couple people that were warning people about this since the 60s.
Oh, well,
or
there was...
Or do you go into that?
So the first time that it's recorded that anyone has mentioned or brought this up as a problem is this guy Spencer Bowles, and he posted about it on a forum, Usenet forum. And it's fascinating. You can look it up online. It just says... It mentions that he has a friend who's also a programmer who's losing sleep over it. Uh-huh. So it's not even Spencer's idea, but I don't know, Spencer's friend.
Yeah. Maybe in the community of programmers, they all kind of knew about it, but just were not saying anything about it for like addressing it because what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's kind of like the Me Too movement. No.
Should I put the Me Too movement up on the board?
I'm just saying, it's like maybe it was just one of those things that were talked about, but it was just accepted.
Right, right, right.
And then, you know, it's 1985 and he's like, oh, damn. He might have just like woke up in the middle of the night and said, we've only got 15 more years something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that I don't think we can put Spencer up on the board or his friends. I mean,
he helped.
Yeah. So I don't know what it was about this programming community that didn't bring it up earlier or didn't think to do something about this two digit. It's just, and again, we talk about this a lot on this podcast. It's like, just a human flub.
Yeah.
That's the scariest type of mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, humans are so imperfect.
I wonder if any of them, while it was happening, like while they were making, like, did they make a conscious decision about 00 because they needed to save space no matter what? Or was it an accident and they didn't even think that this could happen?
I mean, it's such a reflection of us humans as you know, we don't think ahead, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless you have a baby in your arms. Right.
I wish. If I thought ahead, I would have a baby in my arms right now.
But like, unless you're looking, like, I was just babysitting this morning, and I was like thinking of like, oh yeah, we should, you know, fix this planet, you know, because I'm looking at a baby. But like the second I left, you know,
you're tossing your litter trash out,
the car. Yeah. No. But, you know, it's such a reminder. It's like we don't think ahead. We think like, you know, I've got 80 or so years. And like as long as I'm fine and I don't have to deal with it, then yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a scary.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's a huge problem. But anyway.
You gotta save the world.
So we have these programmers up on the board.
Now, may I just say, is it something where it was like the technology at the time? Maybe they were doing stuff that they didn't have all the technology for at the time, so they shouldn't have done it. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good question, because they were kind of pioneers in a way.
And they were going like, well, we're not going to think ahead. We're just going to do what we do now, and we don't have the space for it. We don't have the...
And somebody will figure this out down the road.
Right. So it's almost like human procrastination.
Or like human, like what's it called when you just like think someone else is going to do it?
Oh.
Gosh.
Yeah.
What's that word?
That's a word?
Is it a word? Like a release. It's like a release of liability. Release of liability?
Or like, what is it? I'm going to type in, what is it called? When you
shirking your responsibility. No.
Like putting it on someone else.
The diffusion of responsibility.
Ooh, I love that.
Diffusion.
The bystander effect.
Oh, yeah. You guys have talked about that before.
I feel like you have.
Have we?
Maybe it was on web crawlers.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Like we Melissa did talk about it in the fog, the London fog episode. Because it was the bystander effect.
Is when you think somebody else is going to, like that woman that was getting raped in that alley and nobody called the police because they thought somebody else would do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which that would not happen if I was there.
Hell no.
I've said this before and I'll continue to say this. I am the first person to call 911.
Me too. Really? I call all the time.
Me too. Oh, we are a problem.
Like,
we
hey, can't. Molly, we what's up? what's happening now?
But I will be. I'll be like, okay, there's a man that's walking into the highway. I'm a bit of a highway patrol.
Oh, interesting. I live where... like there's no house on one side of me. There's like a sort of a stairway down into a dead end, and a lot homeless people love it down there. Oh. People with guns, trading guns.
Oh,
I mean, I don't know.
Jeez,
I don't know, but that's what I tell the cops. somebody sleeping on the steps, they might be dead, so I'm calling the cops.
Yeah,
you know, I got to
welfare check. Is that what that is?
I have no. Oh, I see. Yes,
if more people like us had been programmers, then maybe this wouldn't have happened.
I think so, yeah. But we're women.
Yeah,
yes,
so
we are.
We wouldn't have been allowed anyway.
Oh, well, what was that movie? Oh, they're astronauts. Where the three...
They were
well,
cool.
Well, they weren't astronauts.
NASA. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The three women?
It's called Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. But they were astronauts. But they dealt with computers.
They weren't astronauts. They were just computer people.
They were programmers.
Right, computer people that worked for NASA.
They were Y2K specialists.
They did get shot up into space at the end, though.
They did?
Yeah.
Jude.
They didn't know they were working on a rocket ship, and then all of a sudden...
Come on.
It's true.
They did?
Yeah.
In real life?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're lying. So they were, yeah, they were allowed. So maybe we would have been allowed. Anyway, all I'm saying is that... Had there been more
oversight,
yes, in the programming community, like there, Spencer Bowles is just one guy, and there's so many computers out there. The fact that he's the first one to bring it up in a public forum,
it's
1985. The fact that he's in a computer, chat room or whatever that is, that's huge.
I mean. I didn't even know what the internet was till I was in college.
So people start getting word that there's a disaster is bound to happen. Y2K. And Bill Clinton gets this guy, and his name is John Koskinen. Koskinen. K-O-S-K-I-N-E-N. And this is what I found on FCW.com. Mm. In the United States, the race against time was led by John Koskinen, an Office of Management and Budget executive selected to lead President Clinton's council on year 2000 conversion. So Clinton's like, we got to get involved. We've got to do something about.
Is this before the media knows about, like, is going nuts about it?
The media is already, I think this is as a result. Mm. So the media is already going crazy about it. And then a report. So, okay, let's talk about the media and then we'll come back to our friend John.
Okay.
The media is going crazy. BBC hires a correspondent to cover Y2K. Just one person gets hired. Her name is Emma Simpson. She's hired to report on how communities in the UK are preparing for the impact of the year 2000. Then ABC in the US has also invested heavily in their coverage of the millennium chain. Then you have Time Magazine, admittedly, later on published an article where they say, though most prognosticators cautioned that the necessary programs would get fixed in time, the fear of the fallout was still scary enough for Time to put the hysteria on its cover in January of 1999 under the headline, "The End of the World."
Oh my God.
Literally, "The End of the World" is the cover of Time magazine. So it just like exploded. I think it started exploding in before 99. So in 98, because in 98 is when this bill the gets council? Passed.
Oh.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
That is in October of 1998.
And that bill says that what? People that are affected by it?
It encourages American companies to share Y2K data by offering them limited liability protection for sharing information about Y2K. So it's a weird law. It's like if you express concern about Y2K, then we're not going to hold it accountable. We're not going to hold you accountable. Accountable. It sounds like I said
We're not going to eat you.
So everyone is already freaking out. And I think that I always hate putting the media up on the board because it's not satisfying for me.
It's so big.
But I do think there's no one media like conglomerate, or it's not like we can be like the BBC the word, or, you know, Time Magazine that we can really point at, because it was just a frenzy.
Yeah.
So I think the only thing that we can do is put the entire media up on the board.
I think so.
Now, I want to talk about something that came up while I was doing my research, and it's this survivalist / religious types who preyed on fears.
Oh, yes.
So it's not just the media who's like, I want to make a quick buck, but like these people who were kind of like taking advantage of people in mass who were now panicked.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a perfect time. These people are vulnerable. And so,
yeah. What better time to bring up an apocalypse?
Exactly. It's like when the earthquake happened here in California. That was the perfect time for everyone to listen to that awesome podcast, The Big One. The earthquake one?
No, I know The Big One because I have a podcast that I had for 3 years prior.
Yes, The Big Ones.
And we still get tagged.
But you probably get some listeners because of their searches for The Big Ones.
I'm sure they turn it off immediately once they hear what it is.
But yours is way better. I didn't finish The Big One.
Yeah.
I didn't either. Well, I got too much. It's too anxious.
But do you now sleep with sneakers by your bed?
Yeah, I do.
Me too.
And I bought so much equipment. I bought so many things.
Equipment?
Yeah.
Like workout equipment?
No, like survival.
Because you don't want to be getting chubby in the apocalypse.
I'm going to have to walk. The first thing they tell you is you're going to have to walk.
Yes.
I got a bunch of, I made sure my kit was all good to go and all that. Like the amount of water I have in my house now is ridiculous, because what if anything happens to my kitchen, then I'm screwed. I have no water. Also, I don't sleep in my kitchen. So if it happens at night and I can't get to my kitchen, I'm dying of thirst. Like, whatever. But we digress.
Oh, gosh. There's a lot of fun things to do.
I wanted to, these survivalists. So according to Time magazine, it's that kind of uncertainty that some religious millennialists are seizing upon and in the process moving quickly from the plausible to the hyperbolic. In pulpits and on videotapes, on Christian radio station and internet websites, there are dedicated prophets of doom. So they warn of a cascade of Y2K calamities, massive power blackouts, the failure of hospital, factory, fire equipment, the collapse of banking, food shortages, riots. A Y2K article posted last year on the website of Christian Coalition speculated that President Clinton might use the chaos that Y2K unleashes as an opportunity to seize dictatorial powers. The televangelist Pat Robertson is marketing a video called Preparing for the Millennium, a CBN News special report, which summarizes both the Y2K problem and Robertson's novel, The End of an Age, in which Armageddon is triggered by a meteor crash. I mean, these people are perpetuating this fear for personal gain.
Yeah.
One can only imagine what that would be like right now. if Y2K was happening now, that, I mean, Kim Kardashian would be, I'm just making this up, but like.
Well, she'd be lost.
You mean we wouldn't find her?
Yeah.
She
wouldn't be able to keep.
She'd disappear, into thin air.
I'm just saying, people would be profiting. Like Instagram would just be survival kits.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
Promoting some survival kits.
Yeah.
By the way, you're going to be getting a lot of ads for survival kits now that your phone is hearing you talk about survival kits.
Oh yeah. Well, so that's good, and I encourage that.
I need a couple more survival kits, and I live alone.
I think we all need a few more. This is for real, though, and I keep digressing, but you need a survival kit for your car. You know that, right?
Yeah, I don't have a kit. I just have water and sneakers in my car.
Okay, one of my biggest fears is going down a ditch, getting stuck in a ditch. And you laugh. You laugh, right?
What do you mean getting stuck in a ditch?
A ravine.
Okay.
Ever heard of people like
rolling into a canyon?
No, no, a ravine is like off the highway.
She's afraid of potholes.
No. So a ravine, it's like when you know when the highway goes down?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're on a highway and then you kind of look to the side and then it kind of like goes down into a, I don't know,
that's
grassy field or yeah, something like that. So people have accidents, go down and then get stuck in their cars and know everyone's like, she was coming to my house, but we never heard from her.
Yeah.
And then they find them like a week later and they've been surviving off of like a chocolate that they happen to have in their purse.
Oh my gosh.
And this happens all the time, people.
So you got to have chocolate in your emergency kit.
At least a granola bar. It's got to last. Maria is making a face like she's Googling people dying on ravines.
I just am having a hard time picturing. I 100% believe you. It's just I just have to do some research.
I have a ridiculous story.
Please.
I went into a ravine once.
There you go. Oh my God. And I can't believe she was quiet whole time.
But I was with somebody.
Okay.
Okay. But it was because I was very young, okay, everybody? It's because I was going down on him.
What? Also, that is so dangerous.
Thank you. He swerved across four lanes of a highway and went off the road into a ditch.
Oh, my God. No wonder you were shaking your head when I was explaining what a ravine is.
Okay, now I know what a ravine is. I was bobbing my head up and down.
Oh, no!
I would never. I did, but I would never again.
So what happened to the car? You survived, obviously.
It wasn't, I mean, we didn't disappear.
Okay.
You know,
it wasn't a huge accident.
People saw it happen, and he got out of the car stumbling, putting his pants, zipping his pants up. And
did he feel bad?
It was a minivan, so I was like kneeling. Oh my God, this is too much.
This is terrible.
You were kneeling?
I was kneeling in a minivan. His mom's minivan.
I'm saying this is terrible because of the danger.
I know. Teenagers are idiots.
Yes.
They're so
Don't
stupid.
Don't trust teenagers.
But I was an adult teenager. I mean, I was on the older side of teen.
Okay.
I wasn't like 12. I just want everyone to know. Okay,
12
goodbye.
Isn't a teenager.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
No, I think I was 17.
Oh.
So it's okay.
Okay.
But really, teenagers are bad drivers.
Super
Moving
bad.
On.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now, do we want to put the... I feel like I want to put these kinds of people who... These, like, Christian...
Evangel... No.
Just, like, these people who were...
Doomsday.
There's a connection between doomsday and these, like, Christian...
like, religious doomsdayers.
Yes.
I'll put that up.
Yeah, that's good.
Because they also have the...
What's his name, that guy, the preacher... Robert.
Pat Robertson.
Thank you.
I mean,
Pat
that's
Robertson.
A pretty despicable thing to do, where it's like, these people are scared. They're coming to you for answers.
Well, and you're telling them, if you pray and give money to the church, and if you are
read my
not
book.
Read my book, and if you're not sinning, and if you're good people, it's all going to be okay. And there's no way to prove if he's right. Maybe he was right.
Well, he wasn't. So, boo-boo. That's a boo-boo on your part.
And really quick, we're trying to find out who's responsible for the panic.
Yes, and the amount of money and resources that were spent for this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this then brings me to believe, like, were we too safe? Now, this is a really hard thing for me to talk about. This goes against every ounce of my being
overprepared.
Were we too overprepared? And there's this thing I found on that was online. Okay, it's called the precautionary principle. Mm-hmm. The best analysis of this effort I've read came from two Australian researchers, John Fillmore and Aidan Davison, who argue that in a 2002 paper that fighting Y2K was an example of the precautionary principle, an idea well known in the environmental movement. It essentially boils down to this: it's better to be safe than sorry, especially if the sorry end of the spectrum involves the end of the world as we know it. Mm-hmm. And this is from Straight Dope. Still, while all of this is obvious now, it wasn't obvious at the start. Some contend much Y2K expenditure was simply an effort to fend off litigation. That may be true, but so what? Would you want to be the bean counter whose attempts to economize let the nuclear missiles accidentally launch? It was only money. A lot of the systems and softwares were due for revamp anyway. This is according to Straight Dope. And really, who knew? This is the question. Are your insurance premiums wasted if your house doesn't burn down?
Mm.
So, of course, I believe, no, we should get insurance for everything. I would insure everything possible. I would insure this water bottle if I could, right?
Yeah, I don't see why, but okay.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Were we too cautious?
I don't think so.
Oh. Someone what? On my side.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm with you. I pay so much for insurance.
Maria, I mean, can we put that up on the board? This notion of being too safe.
I'm just like stuck in the middle of something, which is this thing that people didn't think ahead for, right? Was going to happen no matter what. No one thought ahead to do it. And then the time came, and instead of keeping it like low key or whatever, figuring it out, it became this huge media sensation.
Yeah. I'm just saying, is it possible that we can blame those who, that feeling of wanting to be overprepared, people like me?
I don't think people thought they were overpreparing, but maybe they, I don't know what people,
I mean, they definitely did.
They overprepared for sure.
How did the government spend all that money to prepare for Y2K? Like, what were they spending all that money on?
Right. It was on mostly their own like computer systems, fixing the bug in their own computer systems.
And who told them this was going to be like a serious problem?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what the corporations were spending most of their money on.
Okay. And then what was Bill, who was the?
Bill Clinton. Oh, John, this is where he comes
John
in.
Koskinen.
And remind me what his deal was.
He's the head of this council called Year 2000 Conversion.
I know that they were outsourcing a lot of people in India going in and manually changing dates, changing things to have four digits. I saw something like that.
This is a big question. Like, can we blame over-reliance on technology then?
Oh, yeah.
At that time. I'm not saying that like technology is bad, right? Because computers are great. They help us in many, many ways. But what I'm talking about is the fact that, okay, so there's this thing called automation complacency. This is from an essay and a study called Understanding Human Overreliance on Technology, Matthew Grissinger. And he says, automation complacency is closely linked, overlapping concept that refers to the monitoring of technology with less frequency or vigilance because of a lower suspicion of error and a stronger belief in its accuracy. So it's this idea that like we've become used to computers and we therefore check up on them less and less and less, verifying that they're doing it correctly. Mm-hmm. And it's experience-based. So let's say, you know, like I'm terrible at math, and so I rely on my phone computer for my calculator. Sure, it's calculator is different, but like I use it once and it's always accurate. It never lets me down, you know, but then you stop double checking yourself.
Yeah, and if it was wrong, then you would never know.
Exactly.
Or how we don't sometimes check our bank accounts or credit card things because they're all automated and you get billed once a month or whatever, but you don't, maybe somebody's got your card and you're,
yeah,
I mean, that's different.
But yes, you here's the thing. You assume that the bank's going to call you then.
Right, right, right.
Because yeah. that's going to trigger something. They've figured out some kind of algorithm mm-hmm. or whatever that if it gets used at a place where you don't frequent, they're going to call you. So that happens once and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then it happens again. And then you're like, oh, okay, so this is what's going to happen every time.
Yeah. So what is this called again?
It's called automation complacency.
I think that's a big one to put on the board.
And I think that's what's happening now in the 80s, right? So if you think about it, it's enough time from 1949 and the 60s, right? Mm-hmm. It's 25 years of from 60 to 1985 when this guy puts it up on the Usenet.com mm-hmm. or whatever. That's a long time to get used to a computer just kind of doing a job. So it's possible that they just didn't even think that that would be a problem until it was.
Yeah. Well, now I'm just going back to the beginning of 1949 when they're making this thing and not even thinking about the next decade because they're really just trying to make this one thing. And it's reminding me of like robots now and what are we not seeing that's going to be a huge problem in the future?
A lot.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Well, and the whole point of computers wasn't even like the computers we know now. It right. was more like storage. It was like we have so many papers. And then think about it now. We have this. Okay, so we now have the cloud. That's our backup, you know? And that was a big thing when Y2K happened was that there was no backup. And that's why people were freaking out. But it's like this iCloud thing. It's like, I don't know what an iCloud is. It's what is an iCloud? How does it what does it look like?
I mean, isn't...
Where does it go?
Isn't the cloud...
everywhere?
No. I mean, isn't it really just like an enormous building somewhere? Oh, God. Isn't it like tons of the big, a big place in like New Mexico?
I'll look it up.
I have no idea.
What is an iCloud? I mean, I get
it's
it.
It's not just like out in the air. That data has to be stored somewhere.
All I'm saying is like I've had to use my iCloud mm-hmm. Multiple times and I don't know what it is, but I like went on my phone and I like looked up my document on an iCloud and it worked for me. So great. I don't have to think about what an iCloud yeah. is because yeah, it yeah, works.
Yeah. Automation complacency.
Automation complacency. It's kind of like it's almost like Y2K is probably one of the most important disasters of of recent history.
But that we didn't have.
That we didn't have and that we should really learn more about.
But did we successfully avert it or did it just not happen because... I mean, did we avert it because of all the money? Is this your next question?
Well, this is what our friend John Kaskik... we'll never get his name right.
Konskin?
Koskinen. So there's a report that came out January 18, 2000.
Okay.
After the survival of Y2K. Koskinen said in January 18 interview in Washington that the relatively problem-free date change that occurred is an indication not that the Y2K problem was not serious, but that the work devoted to fixing thousands of computer systems worldwide was successful. Koskinen said that the absence of serious Y2K disruptions in developing countries, so the Italy's and the South Korea's, where remediation efforts had lagged behind those in the industrial countries, is explained by the less intense reliance in these countries on digital technology and by the fact that they were able to apply the lessons learned from dealing with the problem elsewhere. So, I don't know. To me, this report sounds like he's kind of like dancing around the fact that you know, they spent all this money and mm-hmm. nothing happened. He's yeah. saying that nothing happened because
he's saying he did a good job.
He did a good job.
That's why.
But the other people are saying, well, then why didn't Italy fall apart?
Right.
Where they didn't do anything.
Right.
And he's saying, well, they weren't as reliant on technology.
Like, it's Italy. Come on.
I mean, also, it's South Korea, too. You know, I'm just saying it's fishy. It smells
yeah.
fishy.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Should I put him on the board?
I think we should. Because he was one of the causes for the amount of money that was spent.
And he was also the one in Clinton's ear, right? Like he was the one kind of advising him on that, or was that?
Well, he was hired. Yeah, Clinton hired him for the job.
I have another thing that might be an interesting thing to look at. Could it be that the overhypedness or like the frenzy of it all was that people were unable to communicate with each other in a unified way, where everyone had these different ideas of what could happen and how to fix it and all that stuff? I don't know. It's just a thought. I'm not.
So it's like.
Just look at me with those judging eyes.
No, but what you're saying is that also we have to remember that 98, it was like we were using AOL chats, right? AIM.
I wasn't using anything.
She was in a ravine somewhere.
I was just going down on dudes all day long.
Was that on was that pre Y2K or post?
Pre.
Maybe that the lack of internet. Or lack of communication?
I think it's more lack of people sharing information or being able to all... Because like it sounds like... I don't know a lot about Y2K other than what you're saying. It sounds like the corporations were doing one thing. The government was doing another thing. The media was telling people about how to deal with it. People were making up their own minds about how to deal with it. I mean, it seems like everyone was... Like with an earthquake, it's like, oh, I have to get my pack together. And if it happens, this is what you do.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, okay, well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but this could happen.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's like a lack of communication amongst the programming community.
They should have had a large forum of all the
They should have all gone to Vegas and like had a conference.
Yeah.
So
lack of Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas wasn't as big in 98 or in the 80s. When did Vegas get big?
Oh gosh, I got a story about Vegas.
Oh boy.
No, it's a really quick funny one.
Okay? Oh boy.
I was there with my mom and my nana, and I smoked cigarettes at the time, but they didn't know, and I was 17, and I went out into the garden, and I like hid in the bushes in the garden and smoked a cigarette, and then the sprinklers went off.
No.
That's all. It's not it's not dirty.
A lot happened when you were 17. So
I was
happened.
Wild when I was 17, but just 17.
That was a good year. Okay, so right now up on the board, we have programmers through 1990. So we're talking 49 to 1990.
The lazy bums.
The media. Mm-hmm. Lack of communication amongst the programming community. Religious doomsdayers. Automation complacency, and our good friend John Kiskinen. So we can start. Do you have anything else that you would like to throw up on the board?
I wish. Wish I had one person.
I mean, I feel like we can start crossing things off and kind of do this process of elimination.
Okay, all right.
Off the bat, I don't think we can take Kiskinen off because...
That's who I think we can take off.
Really?
I mean, he was just doing his job. He didn't know what was going to happen, what wasn't going to happen. He just put the funds in the places they needed to be.
He did. But couldn't he have also helped calm the masses?
That's not his job.
Yeah, but saying like, hey guys, like what we found is that this is all fixed, so you don't have to worry about it.
He didn't do that?
No, from what I...
I'm reading this message board of people talking about Y2K, and this guy says, Slothman says, I'm a software engineer. And knowing the quality of code I'd run into in my career, I considered the threat of Y2K to be real but not devastating. The, quote, planes falling from the sky and a new dark age arriving was pretty obviously hype. I expected that there might be several days disruption of information systems and attending confusion as people coped, and figured it was as good a time as any to make sure my earthquake survival kit was up to date and I had paper copies of all my relevant financial information. So what he's saying is, as a computer programmer, it's like, yeah, the worst that could have happened was a couple days without.
Right.
Know.
Which that to me then says religious doomsdayers are kind of have a lot more fault.
Yeah, I don't think Koskinen was doing any of the "we're all going to die" kind of stuff.
Koskinen. Who the hell knows? John. We'll call him John.
I don't think he was going around saying it was the end of the world and all this crazy stuff's going to happen. I think, I don't remember. I think in one of these videos that I watched, he was just like, this is what's going to happen, and we're doing our best to make that not happen. Nobody has anything to worry about. Very dry, very boring kind of guy. Just doing his job.
Yeah, maybe he should have been more warm and charismatic. We would have listened to him.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
He should have been like more like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, kind of caused that kind of sensationalism.
Right, but if the media had interviewed him back then, maybe, you know.
Maybe
we would have, maybe they weren't interested in interviewing him because they wanted the sensational idea.
Yeah.
Should I cross him off?
Yeah, I think we can cross him off right now.
Yes, I won.
Now, I actually think that we can cross off, I don't think we can cross off lack of communication. I think that we can put together the programmers, the actual programmers, and their lack of communication. So like, well, because of their lack of communications, we can blame the programmers.
I don't think that we can blame the programmers through 1990 because they didn't cause the... They were just doing what they were told. They were doing their job, and they didn't cause the hysteria.
No, they didn't. But they didn't have the foresight. They put us in the position in the first place.
Yeah, they just didn't. They just were dumb. I mean, it's very smart, but yeah.
Very smart. Well, some of the smartest people are the dumbest.
That's for sure.
Yeah, look at me.
Doctors. And you.
Doctors and Maria. Some of the dumbest people are the smartest, like me.
I don't know where I fit in there. Somewhere. But I think the lack of communication, for Maria's point, I think was more about how they dealt with it in the later 90s, mm-hmm. With the companies communicating or lacking that communication. But yeah. I mean, combine them if you want. I don't care.
I mean, they were scrambling at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not, the lack of communication isn't just for the programmers. That would be like government, mm-hmm. media. It's like all of the different puzzle pieces.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And had it been just unified, then it probably wouldn't have cost that much money.
If they would have had their summit in Vegas.
Yeah.
Right. If Koskinen would have led it, maybe that's what he was hired to do. Put him back up there.
Okay. So are we really going to take the programmers off of the list?
God.
Maria feels like she don't
care. I
feel
strongly.
To take them off.
Yeah, because they didn't cause the hysteria. They did something that in the end may not have even been that big of a deal.
But they did a massive boo-boo.
But did they? Because nothing happened.
You're right. But. So maybe we just got a little... I'm shimmying right now. Like, we got a little overheated.
Yeah.
Or maybe we solved it. With all of that hard work that Koskinen did. I swear, he's a good guy.
Oh, wow.
Why don't you marry him
what
already?
A journey.
Why don't you go to a minivan with Koskinen?
Okay, fine. Let's take the programmers off. I can't believe it. So I think, what we have left up on the board is the media, lack of communication, not just programmers, mm-hmm. everyone, religious doomsdayers, and automation complacency. I think we should take the media off. I point the finger strong. I have a stronger point at the religious doomsdayers than I have at the media.
They're one and the same to me. Yeah. They're all just trying to make a buck.
The religious doomsdayers wouldn't have a platform if the media didn't give it to them.
But they do, because they have religion. It's a huge platform.
They have their mega churches.
Yeah.
But I think the media has further reach.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but then who was the most scandalized? You know, there's this thing like about religion, which is like, you know, we grow up with the concept of the end of the world.
Right.
That's a normal thing you learn when you're a kid, which is terrifying. Mm-hmm. So like if that hadn't been brought into our zeitgeist, then maybe we wouldn't have freaked out as easily like that. That's like an easy trigger is all I'm saying.
Right.
It's
how much were the religious doomsdayers at the center of the hysteria, though? Like, weren't they, were they like a facet of it? Like if this is coming, that must mean the end is near, like that. But it's not like they were going, wait, what's happening in 2000? Okay, let's go. It wasn't like they were leading the charge.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I guess we can blame the writers of the Bible then for creating the concept of the apocalypse, right, of end of the world. Which, but here's the thing. here's the thing, though. I mean, I don't know if they actually came up with that concept, but
God, we're blaming God now.
Well, yeah. It is a metaphor.
She won't blame the media, but she'll blame God.
End of the world, is a metaphor for just, you know, death, right?
Sure.
This is from Kitsap's son. Okay, this is about, it's from an article that says computer glitch, religious see spiritual omens in Y2K. This is from 1999, January 2nd. It says, Scheer and other charismatic and evangelical Christians have become some of the most active preachers of Y2K awareness and preparedness over the past year. Christian internet sites, publications, radio and TV programs, televangelist videos, seminars, and sermons have explored the Y2K message, ranging from practical preparedness tips to apocalypticism.
Okay, so it's pretty big.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you're saying that we should take the doomsdayers don't have as much guilt as the media itself.
Well, I think the doomsdayers probably went into it with more intention, whereas the media was just doing what they think their job is.
Right, but they feed into each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what about, why don't we put both of those on hold? What about lack of communication and automation complacency?
Automation complacency, I mean, that is,
I don't know how reliant at the time we all were. I mean, certainly not as much as now.
No, and that's a problem. And that's terrible.
It's terrible now, yeah.
Maybe if we didn't have this automation complacency, we would have started talking about it more, but I guess in the 80s people weren't reliant on computers as much.
Gosh, I don't know.
Molly didn't see a computer till like a year ago.
I think we can take automation complacency. I think it's more of a result or something that it's kind of like a warning out there, like we're sending out a Batman signal.
Yeah.
Like, careful, people. So yes. Now we just have lack of communication, religious doomsayers, and media.
I don't know if there's a way for us to know about the lack of communication, if there was a lack of communication. Maybe they were communicating.
They just couldn't get on the same page.
Maybe they were on the same page. Again, we did not have a catastrophe.
Right.
You're right.
What we did have for sure evidence. Was the hysteria.
We did.
Should I take it off?
I think so. Okay, so
this is hard.
I know that you
I don't wanna.
I well, please. We got it. This is tried and true. Our listeners depend on us.
Okay.
I think religious doomsdayers have more to blame than the media, because they came up with the concept of Y2K freak out, or I'm sorry, end of the world freak out. Uh-huh. That to me is more aligned with religion versus like media.
But that's, I'm going to push back on you on this. I feel like, yes, there was a religious aspect of this could be the end of the world, but that's not what a lot of people were freaking out about. They were freaking out about their banks, their them losing money because like their financial stuff would go down, that everything that had been put into a computer, all sorts of information, all of that stuff, the automation, kind of how everything was automatic now, was then going to, if everything went to zero, nothing would be.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any of your money. Were people taking their money out of banks and stuff?
I don't
know. Yeah.
They were.
People took money out of banks, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to put that out there, and then I'm going to step back. I'm going to let you guys decide, but I'm just going to say that it wasn't just apocalypticism. It was also
a good point
about people then everything they had trusted in other in automation would be gone.
Well, okay, here's a thought that you just, because I agree with you. I think we should put automation complacency back on
oh
the board.
Oh, my God. No. Is that allowed? God. I've never seen this before.
Oh, my gosh.
Because.
Wow. Groundbreaking.
Because that's essentially what led to the hysteria. Because we, right. Sure, we weren't as connected to our phones and all that kind of stuff, but we were reliant on an ATM per se,
yeah,
or a plane that has all these beep boop beep boop numbers, mm-hmm. you
beep
know,
beep boop numbers.
That
hospitals,
you know,
nuclear power plants, everything is on a system.
And at that point, things were on computers. I mean, I was writing all of my essays at that point on a computer. Actually, I had a terrible experience with an essay. I wrote an essay for a college that got deleted. But we digress.
Nightmare.
I think we should put that up on the board. And I think, to me, that is actually what is more to blame in this situation.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I think that's really a good point. I do. I know it looks like I'm about to say something else, but I don't, nothing else. Can we get rid of religious doomsday?
Yes. Yeah.
Because those guys, bad intentions, I believe, but yeah. but not a huge reach.
Yeah.
Not as much of a reach as the media.
Yes. Yes.
No, I'm just
I mean, we
say
could
this.
Say In that the Bible opinion. Was the first media that's publication.
Got a, that's got a big, that's true.
The Bible I mean, was the first magazine.
I'm just saying.
And that's got quite a reach. Yeah.
I'm just going to say this, being here for the recordings of many an episode, Rebecca does not like to blame the media.
I don't. I think it's a bit of a cop out because mm-hmm. the media is man-made, right? And there's got to be more to that.
Right.
No, I can see it does feel like a cop out, but it is like it is just that exponential growth of hysteria that it caused, but
yeah.
Automation complacency is what let us get to that point to begin with before the media was able to latch on.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like the media latched on, and I'm not saying, yes, they perpetuated the hysteria.
Yeah.
But what put us in that position in the first place?
Yeah.
Technically the programmers.
Put
but
the programmers back on the board.
But the we programmers, made a mistake. Well, but the programmers were just doing their, you know, right. job and they couldn't have seen it. It's our just complacency.
So what we're doing now is we're blaming
a concept
rather than a specific human.
Yeah, we do that here.
Oh,
that's
yes.
allowed.
I knew that.
No.
No, I like the concept. I mean, I think that might be the right idea, but
should I circle it?
How do you feel?
Let's do it.
I feel good.
Okay.
Okay, I feel good about it.
Okay, automation complacency, you're going to the alarmist jail.
That was a wild ride.
That was. Who knew?
I'm freaking out.
It's never who you accept. Expect. Molly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. That was really fun.
You know, the world is a better place because Y2K never happened, but yes. also because you helped us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And make sure to check out Spermcast, everyone.
Spermcast.
You will not be disappointed.
It's very good.
It's very good. She said so herself.
I hope I didn't give any. I mean, I did give a big spoiler away. I think I
well,
said
it's okay.
I'm not
it's
pregnant.
Okay. It's a journey.
It's a roller coaster, and that's why you go. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll keep that weird pause
yeah,
at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah.
Thank you, Molly.
Bye, guys.
After December 31st, 1999, in the immediate aftermath, everything was fine. One Japanese nuclear energy facility experienced issues with some radiation equipment, but backup facilities kicked in and made it a non-issue. A little later, a bigger error was revealed in the UK by the National Health Service that failure to spot a Millennium Bug computer error led to incorrect Down syndrome test results being sent to 154 pregnant women. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com or send us an email at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Instagram at thealarmistpodcast or Twitter at alarmistthe. Have a great one.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.